the boy, who now looked like a child possessed by demons. The wide eyes and flared nostrils were sure signs that he was no pushover, and if he didn't get away soon, then the crazed boy could stab him again. The strength was draining from him, and as he placed his hands on his side, he felt the blood pumping out. This was no superficial graze. This was bad, and if he didn't get to his car soon, he would bleed to death in the woods. No one would know where he was. Nothing was spoken between them, as Dulcie, or as he was otherwise known, Lord Parker Green, tried to put pressure on the wound and walk away. He had to get away from the place before the kids screamed blue murder and accused him of all sorts. But to Parker Green's horror, the boy jumped to his feet, brandishing the knife and almost daring him on. Parker Green didn't look back, but hurried away as fast as his shaking legs would take him. As soon as Mr. Dulcie was out of sight, Cyril gasped for breath and blinked a few times. Then he looked down at the blood and the knife. Spinning around to see if there was anyone about, he realised that there was no one, just him and the knife dripping with blood. And if he hadn't been holding the evidence, then not even he would have believed what had just taken place. Cyril heard a car engine start up and guessed that Mr. Dulcie had scarpered. He let out a deep breath and shook all over. It was all a shock. His eyes looked at the blood on the ground and then at his shirt. He was covered in claret. How could he ever explain that? And if the man were to die, would he go to prison forever? How would his mother cope? And Howie, how would he get on without him? With fear surging through his veins, he waded out into the river and furiously scrubbed the blood from his shirt using his fingers. The stain was beginning to fade, but it was still there. Christ alive! He bent down, grabbed a handful of mud, and began rubbing it all over the pink stain until finally it turned to a muddy colour and the water eventually washed it clean. As he returned to the bank, he noticed the man's belongings, two fishing rods, a box with fishing hooks and floats, a leather bag, and the plaid blanket lay on the bank. Cyril listened again for anyone approaching, any noise at all, in fact, but apart from the sound of the running water of the river, there was no one. He crouched down to inspect the leather bag. It was made from good quality leather and would probably bring him a few shillings down the market at home. He unzipped the side pocket and slid his fingers inside. He could feel a few coins, some paper, and what felt like a pocket watch. Quickly pulling the contents out, he was wide-eyed with wonder. Not only were there a few shillings, but there were also some pound notes, and yes, what looked like a gold pocket watch. On inspecting it carefully, he saw it was hallmarked, and a huge smile crept across his face. So the watch was solid gold. If he took all the stuff back to the tent, there would be questions, he thought. How could he even explain what had happened? And did he have any right to keep Mr. Dulcie's stuff? But he did feel he had the right. The man was certainly not kosher. Why else would he throw him to the ground and dive onto him with his trousers around his ankles unless he was going to kill him? Away from the clearing, there was thick undergrowth, which was more densely populated with trees. Cyril gathered up Mr. Dulcie's belongings and hid them in the overgrown foliage and stepped back. No one would spot them there. But when he looked back, he decided to take with him the rod he had used earlier. After all, that one was given to him by the potential murderer. He grabbed the bucket of fish, poured the water away, and with the rod under his arm and the fish in the bucket, he headed back. He would tell Frank, but he would never breathe a word to another living soul. As soon as he reached the field and saw some of the pickers merrily singing and picking, while others were larking about, he felt at odds. He peered back over his shoulder and then down at the fish. His hand shook, and a sick feeling rose from his stomach and made his ears tingle. Suddenly, he felt the ground reach up towards him, and everything went dark. It was a few minutes before he came to, and he then had to take a few deep breaths before he felt better. Sitting himself upright, he looked again at the fish in the bucket and the rod by his side. But that vision of Mr. Dulcie and his weird expression as he lunged towards him made Cyril feel sick again. Why did he have his trousers down? What was the man going to do to him? He wondered if Mr. Dulcie had made it to the hospital or had died on the way. He held his hands in front of him and turned them over. A tear trickled down his face, and his mother's words shot through his mind once again. If you can't get away, you use a weapon or anything to hand. Well, he had, and he would do it again. It was all about that look in the man's eyes that had told him he'd been in danger. Real danger. Once Cyril reached the cookhouse, and Shirley saw what he had in the bucket, she called to Henry and Frank to come over and see what they would have for supper. Frank was excited to see Cyril and to hear how the heck he'd brought back 3 trout and a rod. But with one wink and a nod from Cyril, Frank knew there was more to hear. While Henry got cleaned up and then helped Shirley with the cooking, Frank grabbed Cyril's arm and pulled him away.
"So what's going on, Cyril? How did you get that rod?"
Cyril looked behind him.
"Listen, Frank, I got a secret, right? I promised to share everything with you, right?"
Frank nodded quickly, desperate to hear the tale.
"I got us 4-pound notes and there's another fishing rod and the floats and hooks, but I left everything back there, further up the river in the bushes. I couldn't bring them back because your father would ask questions. And well, the thing is this, Frank. This geezer, right? Well, he tried to murder me."
Frank put his hand to his mouth to stop himself from laughing.
"Now, Frank, seriously? Yeah, listen to this. At first, he put his hands down my shorts, and then he pushed me right on my arse, and then got on top of me. I swear, Frank, he was going to kill me."
Hearing that, Frank stopped laughing and tilted his head in disbelief.
"Why would the man want to kill you?" "Frank, I can't prove all of this, but I stabbed him."
Frank pushed Cyril.
"Give over, Cyril. Stop it. I really thought you were honest." "Frank, come with me then, and I'll show you. I ain't no liar, and only told you because I thought I could trust you. I mean, you've hardly said 2 words to me. You ain't going to go telling anyone, are you?"
Frank stopped dead and looked Cyril up and down.
"You are telling the truth, ain't you?"
Cyril sighed and then nodded.
"It was horrible, bleeding scary. I thought I was a goner." "Go on then, Cyril. Show us where it happened."
They hurried through the woods and followed the river until the trees became few and far between and the river widened, and there, just by the bank, was the knife. Cyril had forgotten to hide it.
"See, look, Frank, there's his knife, and look at the mud."
He pointed to the blood just visible on the damp clay. Frank picked up the knife and turned it around in his hand.
"Caw, this is a nice blade. I bet this cuts through anything." Yeah, Frank. Look, what are we going to do about the other stuff? How are we going to explain that we've got the other rod and the box of fishing gear?"
Frank was still admiring the knife.
"Did you stab him hard? I mean, did it go right in or what?"
Cyril stood with his hands on his hips.
"What? Frank, are you really listening to me?"
Frank looked up and smiled.
"Yeah, I'm listening. But you said you would share whatever you found 50-50. How about you have everything else and me? I want this knife. What'd you say?"
Cyril laughed.
"Whatever, Frank. Now come on. I want to show you this box and his fishing gear. I bet it's worth a few, Bob."
Cyril, with Frank on his heels, clambered through the undergrowth until he found all of Mr. Dulcie's belongings. He felt more relaxed with Frank there. After retrieving the box, he carried it to the riverbank and began lifting each compartment out until he got to the bottom and found some bags of sweets.
"Here, look at this lot, Frank. Blimey, the old codger must have had a sweet tooth."
He pulled out a packet of Army and Navy sweets and threw it to Frank.
"There you go."
Frank caught the packet with one hand and peered inside.
"Cheers, Cyril."
As they sat side by side on the bank, sucking on the sweets, Cyril turned to Frank.
"You won't tell anyone, will you? I mean, about me stabbing that man."
Frank turned the knife around in his hand.
"If he was to come back right now, Cyril, I'd stab him myself."
Cyril nearly choked on his aniseed twist.
"Would ya? Really?"
"Yeah, I would. I'd stab him 100 times and then float him down the river."
So you won't tell anyone, will you? Just in case the old git did die. Because then they would lock me up for murder."
Frank placed his arm around Cyril's shoulder.
"You are my best friend. I'll never say a word. But can I keep the knife?"
Cyril nudged him.
"Sure, as long as you don't go digging me with it."
By nightfall, The camp was quietening down, and the trout was cooked to perfection, shared between Henry, Shirley, and Frank. Howie didn't like fish, and Cyril still felt sick. He only ate the baked potato.
"That was the best meal I've had in a long time. Thank you, Cyril. So how did you manage to talk the fishing rod off someone?"
Frank's dad laughed. Cyril quickly responded.
"I caught 6 fish and let this geezer have 3 for his missus, so he gave me spare rod, saying it was no good to him."
"Well, I bet the trout were worth more than the rod. Caw, they cost a pretty penny, they do. So this was a right treat, son."
Cyril was taking it all in. He had no idea that the fish were worth so much money, and he knew where there were plenty more. As soon as they returned to their tents, Cyril pulled out his rucksack and began emptying the clothes.
"What are you doing, Cyril?" asked Frank, as he fiddled with his torch. "I think the batteries are flat."
"I'm going fishing up at the lake where there are hundreds, even millions of trout. I'm going to catch as many as I can carry and sell them to the hop pickers for 1 shilling apiece. What do you reckon?"
Frank laughed and shook his head.
"Are you really going fishing? In the dark?"
"Course. Are you coming? 'Cause then we can carry more between us."
Frank nodded. In his mind, it seemed that Cyril had more fun out of life than he did.
"Yeah, all right. And if any bloke tries to murder us, I'll stab him with me new knife."
Cyril giggled.
"What, like fish food?"
Quietly, they crept out of the tent and made their way through the woods until they found the river and followed to where it widened. Cyril searched the undergrowth again for the leather bag and the box, and as soon as he found them, he emptied the contents and placed them into his rucksack. The bait box still contained a few worms, so they were set to go. Frank eventually got his torch to work, and soon they were able to follow a small stream that flowed into the river behind them from the trout farm further upstream. As the boys trudged along for a few hundred yards, they came across a clearing. It was dominated by a huge house. A new barbed wire fence had been erected with signs saying, "Private property, keep out." Cyril managed to pull the 2 lines of barbed wire apart and allowed Frank, with his long legs, to squeeze through first, before he himself climbed through. The moonlight was bright enough for Cyril to spot the large lake just below the house. He stopped and stared.
"Caw, Frank, look at that, mate. Fancy living in a big house in the middle of a field with your own woods and a lake all to yourself."
"I don't know. It's a bit too big, but I suppose it's better than my house."
An owl hooted, and a fox shot out from a bush, making both of the boys jump. Slowly, they caught their breath, and walking gingerly, they followed the stream towards the lake.
"I wonder what they would do if they caught us nicking their fish," asked Frank.
"Nothing. We just have to take them back, I suppose. I mean, what can they really do? I'll just say we didn't know, and that I can't read or write."
Frank laughed.
"And I reckon they'd believe you and all."
As Frank shone the torch on the stream, he could see a trout stuck on the rock in the shallows.
"There, Cyril, look. You can grab that one with your hands."
Cyril dropped his rod and rucksack and jumped into the stream. With both hands, he grabbed the fish and threw it onto the grass. Frank instantly snatched the fish and plunged his knife into its head.
"You can't let it gasp for breath. You've got to put it out of its misery."
Cyril nodded.
"Yeah, I guess so.
I love this knife. It's really sharp. Hey, look, there's another fish. Bloody hell, Cyril. They are just hovering there."
Cyril wasted no time in grabbing the fish and then going for another one.
"I reckon these little ones have escaped from that lake, but I bet the bigger ones are trapped," said Cyril,
now pointing to the silver appearance of the lake.
"Cyril, we can just catch these. We don't need to go up there. Besides, what if we get caught?"
Cyril peered up at Frank.
"I never took you for no chicken, Frank."
With his eyes narrowing, Frank glared back.
"I ain't no chicken, Cyril."
"Well, come on then, Frank. What are you waiting for?"
Frank moaned under his breath, but followed Cyril anyway. A few hundred yards further on, they came to the enormous property set in its own grounds above the lake. Cyril was struck by wonder at the size of the beautiful house. Every window was bathed in a soft orange glow, and on the roof there were at least 12 chimneys, which looked as though they'd been designed especially for this house. The driveway was grand. It was lined with bushes and hedges, which appeared to have been cut with scissors. He truly had seen nothing like it. Both Cyril and Frank remained vigilant in case they could be spotted. But the house was far enough away. If anyone should suddenly appear, Cyril reckoned he and Frank would have a good head start to get away. Once they reached the lake, Cyril sat down and just gazed. It was stunningly still and so peaceful, until every so often a fish would flick its tail and cause ripples.
"What are you doing now, Cyril?"
"I'm putting a worm on an hook. I want to see how big these fish really are."
Remembering what he'd been taught, Cyril cast out and was pleased that the float was bright enough for him to see.
Bingo!
Almost in a flash, the float was dragged down. Cyril yanked at the rod and then began reeling the fish in. It was a fighter and tough to pull, but the fish didn't stand a chance, and it was on the surface before he could say bird's eye fish fingers. He was proved right about what he'd said back by the stream. This trout was three times the size.
"Quick, Frank, sort this one out. I'm going to catch another."
Within 30 minutes, they had 10 fish in the bucket. Frank looked at their catch and the weight of it.
"I think we'd best go, Cyril. I'm not sure how far I can carry this lot."
Cyril knew he had a point and began taking his rod apart and packing up the fishing gear. Just as they were off, they heard a deep, loud voice.
"Oi, stop right there."
Frank and Cyril turned to see who was shouting. To their horror, a man stood aiming a rifle with a young lad standing by his side.
"Stop or I'll shoot."
Cyril couldn't believe for a moment that a grown man would actually shoot at them.
"Leg it, Frank."
Frank didn't have a chance to consider any alternative. He ran, and without thinking to ditch the bucket, he gripped the handle tightly and tore along the stream towards the barbed wire fence. The fish were sliding up the sides, but Frank continued on. Cyril was right behind him, though, dragging his rucksack along.
Bang!
The gun fired, and both Frank and Cyril automatically ducked.
"Jesus, he's really shooting at us!"
Then they heard the young lad shout,
"Shoot them, father! Shoot them!"
Suddenly, Frank lost his footing and tumbled over. Cyril rushed to his side and grabbed his hand to pull him up.
"Come on, Frank, we've got to get out of here. Get up!"
But Frank had twisted his ankle, and he was now yelping in pain. Cyril, however, would not leave him there like an injured dog. He yanked at Frank's arm.
"Come on, get up!"
Frank yelped again as he put his weight on the ankle, but the fear of being shot gave him the strength he needed to get away. As Cyril clutched Frank's arm, Frank managed to grab the handle of the bucket, and again they were on their way. Once they reached the barbed wire fence, Cyril knew they were nearly safe. The other side appeared to be common land with no sign telling them that it was private property. Carefully holding the barbed wire apart for Frank to climb through, Cyril then launched his rucksack and climbed through himself. Cyril and Frank ducked again when they heard another bang. Cyril was angry. He knew that man and his son couldn't shoot him, not when they weren't on his property. What bloody right did they have? Frank was still hobbling when Cyril threw his rucksack over his shoulder and held Frank up to support him. Out of breath, and with their ears banging as their adrenaline pumped around their bodies, they never expected the man's son to follow them through the fence, until the boy suddenly pushed Cyril hard in the back, knocking him flying. Cyril spun around to see the lad was older than them, probably around 13. The man, who Cyril could only assume was his father, was not in sight. There was just Frank, the toffee-nosed boy, and himself.
"You thieving poachers! Hand back the fish and your rod and everything you have on you as compensation, or I will get my father to shoot you dead as trespassers."
Frank's usually deadpan face changed. He was in pain with his ankle, and he wasn't going to be bullied by an older boy or anyone ever again.
"If you want it, you snotty prick, then you can come and get it."
Cyril was gobsmacked by Frank's deep, angry voice.
"Come on, Toff, come and get it."
Cyril's eyes widened as he watched Frank straighten up. Suddenly, Frank looked like a giant, almost the same size as the Toff. Then Cyril saw something gleaming in Frank's hand. The knife.
"Oh, God," he mumbled under his breath.
Cyril looked over the lad's shoulder to see if his father was there with the gun, but he was nowhere to be seen in the darkness.
"Come near me, or me mate, and I'll slice your face off."
Cyril swallowed hard. Even he was scared. Frank's tone was sinister, and it was at that point he knew his best buddy really meant it. The toff laughed like a girl and then shook his head.
Oh, dear, dear me, you silly little boy. I am the lord of this land. You are mere farm workers. I can have you shot. Now, hand over the rod and everything else you have before I call my father over to put a bullet through your heads.
The cocky look on the toff's face had Frank flaring his nostrils.
Like I said, come and take it.
The young man smirked.
Do you know who I am? I don't give a rat's arse who you are. You ain't taking my stuff without taking a clumping from me first. I am Lord Chambers' son, and my father owns most of the land around here, so I will take what I want, if it's on our land.
Cyril glared at the sign behind him.
This bit ain't your land, though, is it?
The toff looked Cyril up and down and curled his lip.
You gutter snipe!
He yelled as he lunged forward, and with his fist clenched, he punched Cyril in the chest, making Cyril stagger back and gasp for breath. Frank was about to rip into Lord Chambers' son when Cyril growled like a wounded bear. He ran with his head down straight into the lad's chest, and then, in a frenzy, he grabbed him by his buttoned-up shirt collar, holding him within easy reach while he threw a hard punch connecting with the toff's chin. Frank was amazed by the speed at which Cyril could fight. Small he may be, but he was fast. However, the toff was a great deal bigger, and although he was hurt, he managed to push Cyril off and punch him in the face twice before Frank intervened and pulled him away. The older lad then turned on Frank by giving him a nasty right hook to the side of Frank's face. Cyril was still clutching his split lip when he saw Frank glare as though he was deranged at the toff. In a deliberate, almost slow-motion reaction, he snatched him by the back of his head, and with the knife in his other hand, he used it to make a deep cut down the lad's chin. Suddenly, like a banshee, Lord Chambers' son screamed and put his hands to his face and then pulled them away to look at the blood. He was so panicked by the sight of his own blood in his hands, he turned and ran towards the fence. But without thinking, when he tried to dive between the lines of barbed wire, he got his tweed trousers caught by the seat of his pants, and as he tugged and tugged, he lost his balance and toppled over. Stupidly, though, when he grabbed the barbed wire to restore his balance, he injured himself even more. Cyril didn't hang around to help or see how much damage the toff was doing to himself. He snatched his rucksack and clasped Frank's arm to hurry him away. Frank grabbed the bucket of fish and hobbled along with Cyril's help. With the black clouds obscuring the moonlight and the tall leafy leaves making it hard to see where they were going, the boys followed the river until they came to a familiar field. In the distance, they could see the fires by the cookhouses. They paused for a moment to catch their breath.
What should we tell your old man?
Asked Cyril.
Nothing, unless he knows we've not been in the tent.
Frank pointed at Cyril's bucket.
You can say that you went back and fished for those from the river. He won't say much to you, will he? What if that Lord's son grasses and the police come asking questions? I don't know, Cyril. I guess I'll be in a lot of trouble, eh?
Cyril sat down for a moment.
Nah, you won't. Listen, if they come and accuse us of stabbing him, I'll just say he chased us, but he got caught up in that barbed wire.
Frank sat down beside him and laughed.
Silly beggar. Fancy getting caught up like that. I bet he's cut to bleeding ribbons now, eh?
Cyril laughed.
Served him right. Thanks for not running off and leaving me to get shot.
Cyril nudged his arm.
You're me mate. Mates don't leave you in the shit. Ever.
Chapter 6. Luckily for Cyril and Frank, Lord Chambers didn't take the matter to the authorities, so no police came looking for the boys. The Londoners were coming to the end of their week away. Cyril didn't relish going back to the gloomy streets of Bermondsey, although he had missed his mother. The sun had browned their faces, bleached their hair, and given them a twinkle in their eyes. Howie had caught the sun the most because he was forever spending time with the pig farmer and the piglets, which meant he was constantly being dunked in the steel bath to remove the stench, after which he was told to run about to dry off. With his dark hair and now chocolate-coloured skin, anyone would have mistaken him for an Italian. Henry helped Shirley to pack away their belongings. The load was lighter, as they'd made sure they'd used up everything they had. Cyril's rucksack, however, was heavier, but no one took much notice. Frank hung on to his knife and hid it well in his bag. They had a few hours before they would catch the train home. Cyril hovered around the tuck shop area with Frank, debating whether to buy chocolate or hard-boiled sweets, when the boys heard a car approach. Cyril turned to see who was coming. He assumed it was more hop pickers ready for the next week and the last of the hop picking season. Seeing the familiar tall, bony-looking gentleman step out of his car, dressed in a suit and wearing a trilby hat, in this weather as well, his eyes widened. What was Mr. Bates doing here? He wondered. He didn't approach Mr. Bates, but he watched as Mr. Marsden hurried over. Cyril stared as Mr. Bates removed his hat and nodded to Mr. Marsden to indicate he wanted a private word. Cyril could see the men whispering to each other, and at that point they turned and looked his way. Cyril guessed they were talking about him, but he had no idea why. He turned to Frank.
What do you reckon that's all about?
I don't know. But that's Mr. Bates, your neighbour, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to see what he's doing here.
He slapped some pennies into Frank's hand.
Hard-boiled, I think.
Cyril marched down towards the men and passed Howie on the curb, strangling the life out of the cat with his overzealous hugs. Before Cyril even reached the two men, Mr. Bates looked up and beckoned him over. Cyril hurried to the men and stopped dead, trying to read the anxious expression on Mr. Bates' face.
What are you doing here, Mr. Bates?
I've come to pick you and your brother up.
Why?
Here, Cyril, said Henry Marsden. That's enough questions. You just do as Mr. Bates says. All right, son?
Cyril looked at Mr. Marsden.
Of course I will do as I'm told. But what's going on? Is me mum all right?
He then clocked Mr. Bates, giving Mr. Marsden a look of unease. Almost immediately, Cyril felt his insides turn out and a nasty sick feeling made its way up to his mouth.
Is me mum all right? What's going on?
Mr. Bates put his hand on Cyril's shoulder.
Your mum's all right, Cyril, but you need to come with me. It's only for a couple of days or so.
But if mum's all right, why can't I see her?
Mr. Bates was not a patient man at the best of times, but he didn't have either the time or the energy to answer 101 questions from Cyril.
Listen, Cyril, we have to go now, all right? You and your brother. Your mum is in the police station.
He held up his hand before Cyril said any more.
I will explain in the car, but right now we have to go. The police will be on their way to question you about stuff, so I'm going to take you to my other house away from here. Now, Cyril, do you understand what I'm saying?
Cyril gave a firm nod, looked at Mr. Marsden, and offered his hand. Mr. Marsden was surprised that the little lad was so mature. He shook hands and smiled.
Good lad. We will see you in a few days, eh?
As Cyril walked away to fetch his belongings, he heard Mr. Marsden say,
Well, I never knew the lad was Dylan's grandson. God, I wonder if he takes after the old man.
Then Cyril paused and waited to hear the answer.
He's a lot like him. Well, in his ways, that is. Well, God help Bermondsey when that boy reaches a young man, if he's half the man his grandfather was, replied Mr. Marsden.
Cyril wondered if that was a good thing or a bad thing. However, right now, he was more concerned about his mother. He trusted Mr. Bates, and so he quickly scooped up his belongings and hurried over to Frank. He whispered,
I got to go, Frank. I can't say why, but I'll be back home soon.
Frank's shoulders drooped in disappointment. He was thoroughly enjoying Cyril's company. It was as if they were brothers. He didn't have a brother, only cousins over in Poplar. He watched Cyril hurry back and grab Howie and their rucksacks, and he continued gazing as his friends made their way to the car that was idling in the entrance to the farm. Then he saw Mr. Bates open the back door of the car for Howie to climb into. He was expecting Cyril to do likewise. A grin crept across Frank's face when he saw Cyril skip around to the front, while Mr. Bates could only shake his head in disbelief. Frank smiled to himself at the cheek of Cyril. He thought about what Cyril had once said.
Yeah, my mouth gets me in trouble, and back out again.
Cyril was silent, and he sat still until Mr. Bates was a mile along the country lane.
I didn't know you had a motor, Mr. Bates.
There's a lot you don't know about me, and to be frank, lad, that's how I like my life to be. It's one long mystery.
Is our mum okay? And why is she at the police station?
Mr. Bates looked in the rearview mirror at Howie, who was just gulping out of the window.
Is he always like that? In a dream world with a grin on his face?
Mum says our Howie's what you call a kind-hearted lad.
Oh, is that what they call it?
Mr. Bates, why is Mum in the police station? Is it about the landlord's murder?
Mr. Bates couldn't put off the inevitable. Knowing what Cyril was like, there would be endless questions. He understood Cyril, though. The boy, as young as he was, wasn't stupid. In fact, he had intelligence that few his age had. And then there was the smartness behind those inquisitive eyes.
Yes, they've pulled her in for questioning because she was the last person who had any grievance with the landlord.
Cyril's palms began to sweat and his knees shook. The thought of his mum going to prison was unbearable.
But what are you saying, Mr. Bates? She may have been the last person who had a grievance with the landlord, but she wasn't out that night he was murdered. She was at home with me. I can tell the police that.
Mr. Bates put his foot down and took off his hat, tossing it over his shoulder onto the back seat.
Cyril, the police know that your mum was probably one of the last people to see the landlord alive, because Saturday night she was playing poker with him.
But that was Saturday night, Mr. Bates, not Sunday night when he was killed.
The landlord wasn't murdered on Sunday night. He was murdered in the early hours of Sunday morning, after the poker game. He was knifed through the chest. But his wife didn't discover his body until Monday morning when she went to change the barrels. He'd apparently been murdered on the street and his body was thrown down the cellar from the pavement doors. So they believe whoever murdered him had a reason, and that son is your mum.
Cyril said no more, but mulled over everything that Mr. Bates had just said. Sensing that Cyril was chewing over his thoughts, Mr. Bates tapped the lad's knee to console him.
Listen, Cyril, you have to trust me. Not that you have any reason to, but when we get to my cottage and we're out of earshot, then I will explain everything to you. But you have to be bloody grown up about all of this.
I understand, Mr. Bates. As long as you have a bloody good idea of how to get my mum out the police station.
Mr. Bates grinned. Cyril reminded him of himself as a young lad.
Don't you worry about your mum. I won't let anything happen to her.
Cyril sank back into his seat and tried to calm down. He could feel tears welling up in his eyes, but he quickly blinked them back. He was a man now, not a kid, and men didn't cry. After a good half an hour, Mr. Bates slowed the car down enough to turn into a drive. Cyril gripped the seat for a moment because the drive itself was so overgrown with hanging vines and foliage that he thought the car would end up in a hedgerow. However, a few seconds later, a small cottage came into view. Cyril hopped out before Mr. Bates had even opened the door. He stretched and looked around. The cottage looked a bit dingy, but his mother always said that you should never judge a book by its cover. He noticed to the right of the cottage a pile of logs and an axe. This was different, he thought. A proper log fire inside, no doubt. While Mr. Bates unloaded the boot, Cyril walked up to a window and peered in. Pleasantly surprised at the inside of the building, Cyril, still with his nose pressed to the glass, called out,
"It's a bit of all right, Mr. Bates, eh?"
"Cyril, take a bag or two, would you please?"
Cyril hurried back to the car and relieved Mr. Bates of all the luggage he seemed to be laden down with. He tapped on the window to wake Howie, who'd fallen asleep after 3 minutes into the journey. Mr. Bates was taken aback by how much Cyril could carry and nodded out of respect. Once they were inside, the relief from the sun was instant because the stone walls kept the heat out. Mr. Bates walked on ahead through the small hallway directly into the kitchen, where he offloaded his and Cyril's bags. He then turned to Cyril and pointed to the door on the right, which led into the main room, the living room. Cyril had seen it from the outside, but inside it was even better. The walls were gleaming white, unlike his main room at home, where everything was blackened with soot. The floors were covered with thick rugs, so only the bare floorboards were visible around the perimeter of the room. The open fireplace was huge compared to his at home, and there, on the cabinets and on the mantelpiece, were photos and ornaments.
"Gaw, he's lovely, Mr. Bates."
He turned to face him.
"So why do you live next door to us in shitty Bermondsey, when you've got all this lot?"
Mr. Bates nearly choked.
"Bloody hell, Cyril. You don't hold back, do you?"
He gestured for the two boys to take a seat.
"Me and you, Cyril, are going to have a chat."
He looked at Howie, who was just gazing around the room. Cyril waved his hand.
"It's all right, Mr. Bates. Howie won't say nothing."
"No, I don't suppose he will. Right then, down to business. Your mum has been arrested for the murder of the landlord, but..."
He paused and took a deep breath.
"They have nothing on her other than the fact she was the last person to have any gripe with the man. So for the moment, they have her down at the station."
Cyril was still perplexed and screwed his nose up.
"But why did I have to say I was with you that night?"
"Look, Cyril, the odds were that the filth would have dragged me in over it and tried to pin it on me."
Still confused, Cyril asked,
"Why would they even think it was you, Mr. Bates?"
Mr. Bates didn't answer right away. Instead, he walked over to a small drinks cabinet and poured himself a brandy.
"Okay. I went to prison many moons ago, for a very long time. And so, see, the likes of me, well, we get pulled in if there's a serious crime like a murder in the vicinity of where I live."
Cyril was now getting the picture.
"So did you go to prison for murder then?"
"Yes, if you must bloody know."
"Was my grandfather involved? Only I know you and him were mates."
Staring into nothing, Mr. Bates swigged his brandy.
"No, Cyril."
"Are you sure they won't put my mum in prison?"
Mr. Bates snapped out of his gaze.
"Yes, I'm positive, Cyril. They've nothing on her. And just because she was the last person to have an argument with the man doesn't make her a killer. So,"
he looked at his watch,
"this time tomorrow they will have to let her go. The reason I came to collect you is that the boys in blue can do some nasty shit to get her to make a false confession, like have you and your brother put in temporary care, and then it's a bastard getting you back. They play all kinds of dirty tricks, so that's why I got you here, so they can't get their hands on you. For one, to make you talk, and for two, to take you away to the social services."
"Jesus, Mr. Bates, does me mum know all of this? I mean, won't she be worrying?"
Mr. Bates smiled.
"Listen to me. Your mum is a very tough lady. She knows what to do. And not only that, but have a bloody good lawyer who will have her out of there in no time. In fact, as I just said, this time tomorrow, to be precise. He told me what the police are up to, so he knows what to do, and that's why you two are here. Are you with me now?"
"Why are you helping us, Mr. Bates?"
Mr. Bates sighed heavily and took another swig of his brandy.
"Because, lad, at one time your grandfather was my best mate. He was like a brother, he was, but I let him down a long time ago. He wrote to me and asked me to look out for your mum, and I didn't, until recently, when she came to my bedroom to help me get better. So let's just say, I am repaying a big debt."
"Mum never talks about her dad much. Will you tell me about him?"
"Your lovely mum keeps a lot to herself. I've just found out how much bleeding debt your father left her with. But yes, Cyril, one day I will. When you're old enough to understand his ways. And mine, funnily enough. I will tell you. And maybe you will learn a thing or two."
Part 2. Chapter 7. Cyril stared at himself in the hallway mirror. Mr. Bates's suit was a little snug around the middle, but at least the trouser bottoms weren't swinging around his ankles. The navy blue was a respectable colour, and he had to admit to himself that he looked smart. The white shirt was pressed, and the final touch was achieved by adding a slim blue tie and a slap of aftershave. Just as he stood to the side to admire his side profile, Peggy called out,
"Cyril, love, you won't be long, will you? You may wear a smart three-piece, but that don't make you a man ready to be out all hours."
"Mum, me and Frank are off job hunting, up the West End."
He straightened his tie and smiled again.
"You ain't even finished school, so what are you on about?"
We will in a few weeks, and we want to be ready when we do, Mum. Don't you go worrying now. I'll be back before midnight.
Peggy laughed.
All right, Cinderella. Mind you don't get into any trouble. Do you hear me, son?
Mum, when have I ever brought trouble to your door?
That's a really good question, son. Where do I bloody start? How about the time you just managed to swerve Ballstall because you nearly brought London Rail to a halt? I mean, Cyril, fancy taking all the nuts and bolts off the tracks to sell for scrap. And I wouldn't have minded, but you'd bleed and nick the replacements before the company even had a chance to fit them. I thought a near brush with the law would have kept you on the straight and narrow, but not you, eh?
Cyril was still admiring himself in the mirror. He smiled when he heard the humorous tone in her voice.
And you had the council take on an extra 6 months of laying the new road because you and the boys kept nicking the tar blocks. The coalmen nearly went out of business because the neighbours weren't buying the coal and...
Mum, I'm not going to get in any trouble. Not tonight.
Suddenly Peggy appeared and looked Cyril up and down.
Well, look at you.
What do you reckon, Mum? Mr. Bates's suit looks smashing on me, don't you think?
Peggy raised her brow.
You sure look fine, son. But maybe a little too old in those clothes.
There's nothing wrong in that, is there?
Peggy sighed.
Well, only in the fact that people would treat you as a lot older, and let's face it, you're still only 15, and you should look and act like it.
Cyril noticed the sad expression in her eyes.
What's wrong, Mum?
I don't know, Cyril. Sometimes I look at you and see a man. In fact, I don't know if you were ever a little lad. With your father running off the way he did, somehow it made you believe you were the man of the house, and you had it firmly fixed in your brain that it was your job to see us all okay. But it wasn't, son. It was my responsibility to look after us all. And I feel at times that I've failed you and...
Cyril stepped away from the mirror and placed an arm around his mother's shoulders.
You never failed me. Ever. Me old man buggering off probably did me a favour in some ways. We've had Mr. Bates, and he's taught me a lot, you know. Not like me dad, who only showed me that getting drunk on the last few shillings only leads to bloody misery and being skint. Well, I ain't ever going to be skint. Not all the time I have a hole in me arse.
Cyril!
A cheeky giggle left Cyril's mouth.
I'll be a very rich man, even a lord one day. And I will wipe those tears of yours away and replace them with diamonds. You'll see, Mum.
Oh, give over, Cyril. You just get yourself a good job and live a decent life. We did all right in the end, didn't we? We got this new flat with all its heating, a full mica kitchen, and no more dirty stinking walls or rats or coal to worry about. Look at the huge windows and the little balcony. I can see right across London now. What more could we want, eh?
Cyril felt a lump in his throat. It hadn't been easy, not one little bit. The whole street, barring Mr. Bates's house and theirs, had once been vacant. It had been a dismal place then. Even Frank and Mrs. Peabody had been rehomed in the new flats before Cyril and his family were allocated one. A whole year went by living in a run-down, derelict street before the news came that they were going to be moving. Cyril knew it was Mr. Bates who had been influential in securing a move. He'd been off to school one day when he'd spotted Mr. Bates and the dreaded rent man talking. It was the very next day when some official turned up with the offer. He recalled his mother's face. She seemed to light up like the gas lamp, all beaming and shiny. She was so excited she could hardly get the words out. She was so out of breath.
A two-bedroom flat in one of the new blocks with heating and a new kitchen.
Cyril had danced around the living room, enjoying her elation and soaking in her happiness. However, Cyril had never forgotten the trip to Kent and the adventurous week of hop-picking. He'd also never forgotten the huge house, that mansion, and the lord's son whose father owned it. He'd learned so much that week and the days that followed. As Mr. Bates had promised, his mother had been released on the hour. The police had had no evidence, and so the case was closed. He remembered the glance that passed then between Mr. Bates and his mother. It was a knowing look, an expression of accomplishment, and he remembered searching the house high and low for the potato peeling knife. It never did turn up. He realised that day that his mother wasn't as straight-laced as he thought she was. When he asked her why some people lived in a mansion and others didn't, she explained about the world of the gentry. The list was endless, what with the aristocrats, the toffs, the snobs, the dukes, the lords, and the barons. Cyril had never forgotten those words that left his mother's lips. "Cyril, you can never be a lord. You have to be born a lord, and to be born into money." He just couldn't understand how someone could be automatically entitled to so much wealth without having worked a day's hard graft for the privilege. It angered him when he recalled the young lord telling his father to shoot them for taking a few fish to eat. He was glad Frank had cut the toff's face, and he hoped he had a scar by now. And he still held that anger for the rich, who really didn't deserve to be so, and that sympathy for the poor, who really didn't deserve to be in that state either.
"And Cyril, make sure you take your key. I can't leave it on the string any more.
Apparently, there are some nasty gangs going around breaking into flats and scaring the bejesus out of the pensioners. Two old dears were startled only last week in the lift. The bloody sods nicked a butterfly brooch off one lady's hat, and then they even tried to snatch the other old lady's bag. But when she bashed them around the head and the lift door opened, two men were waiting there, and so the sods scarpered. Anyway, Cyril, they have been known to break into the flats, so I'm just saying, watch yourself and take your key." Cyril felt in his trouser pockets, and there, sure enough, was the key. As soon as he opened the front door, he saw Frank with his hand poised to knock. Peggy laughed.
"Bloody hell, Frank. You've grown again over the holidays. I think you must be the same size as your father now."
Frank blushed. "Yes, Mrs. Reardon. In fact, I'm a little taller. He's getting a right belly on him now, though." Peggy laughed.
"It happens to all you men if you let the beer get the better of you. Now then, off you go. And keep out of trouble."
"Always, Mrs. Reardon," replied Frank. As soon as they were in the lift, Frank grinned. "Mr. Bates's suit fits you like a glove. And what do you think about this whistle? It was me old man's, but he's too fat now to fit in it.
It looks great on you, mate. Do you reckon we'll pass off as 21 or what?"
Frank shrugged his huge lintel-sized shoulders. "There's only one way to find out." By the time they reached the Dorchester Hotel, their plan was in place. The size and the grandness of the building made both Cyril and Frank step back and take it all in. Cyril's idea was more or less just a theory, but it was a plan that would be the start of a new way to earn a few bob, if it worked. As they pushed their shoulders back and held their heads high, they marched confidently through the large doors and right past the concierge. Once inside, they surveyed the grand foyer. The place reeked of money. The tall pillars looked as if they'd been made from gold, something out of a Greek mythology book. The chairs were covered in red and purple velvet, and the floor was made of highly polished marble. Everywhere they looked, it shone like glass. The bellboys marched from the reception and onto the lifts, carrying suitcases, and one young employee even held a chihuahua dressed as a baby. The manager walked around with a permanent grin smacked across his face, and in among the hustle and bustle of the staff were the wealthy clientele. Cyril guided Frank over to a less conspicuous place where two chairs were partially hidden by what looked to be a big palm tree. They realised that there was less chance of them being noticed, although it was hard not to be aware of Frank with his dark hair and tall build. Cyril, on the other hand, could really weave in and out among the crowd, and no one would even recall him being there. It was just how he liked it, too. They sat for a moment and watched until Cyril spotted exactly who he was looking for.
"There, Frank. See that group?"
He pointed to some people standing by a table near the bar area.
"Yeah, Cyril. I can see them." "Good. Keep watching."
As Cyril studied the slim woman surrounded by three men, he clocked her dress, her shoes, and her bag. She was roughly his mother's size, and the dress was obviously some very expensive design. The fur around her shoulders was probably worth more than the contents of his family's entire flat. She was attractive, with dark hair piled high on her head. Her thick black lashes, like butterfly wings, fluttered as she laughed aloud. She was holding a cocktail glass. Cyril guessed she was drinking a martini cocktail, and in her other hand, she held a long black cigarette holder. As soon as she popped it in her mouth, one of the men was there at the ready with a lighter. Cyril imagined his mother there, standing next to the rich woman. What a stark contrast that would be. He could easily picture his mum in her plain short skirt and an ordinary jumper, with a string of cheap pearls he'd nicked from the market, and wearing shoes with the heels worn down and her hair tied back with a plain band.
Right, Frank. Get yourself off up to the bar and order a pint of bitter and a glass of white wine.
Frank frowned.
Wine?
Cyril shook his head, slightly frustrated that his friend wasn't on his wavelength.
Yeah, because white wine won't stain, will it? Anyway, buy the drinks and hang around over there. Look, she's gone off to powder her nose. As soon as she's in sight, walk past and tip the wine down her frock, but make sure it looks like an accident.
Frank didn't see any point in questioning it. He only hoped that Cyril knew exactly what he was doing. He got up and did as Cyril instructed. He didn't have any qualms over not being served, but he did almost choke on the bill. Once he had the drinks firmly in his grasp, he watched the ladies' room for any signs that the posh woman was on her way back. He knew he had to get to her before she reached the table, or the three men would cause a problem. Suddenly, she appeared and was heading his way. He swallowed hard and focused on his plan of action. He had her in his eyeline. Fortunately for him, she was searching for something in her bag. She didn't look up until he bumped into her, and at that point, he spilled the entire contents of the glass of wine down the front of her dress. Instantly, she gasped as the cold drink splashed onto her neck and through her thin outfit. Almost as a reflex action, she then tried desperately to pull the front of the dress away from her skin.
For God's sake! You bloody great oaf! Now look what you've done! This dress cost a fortune and now it's ruined!
I'm so sorry, miss. I didn't mean to.
Christ! Now I'll have to change. Why don't you look where you're going in future?
With that, Frank turned to Cyril and smiled. Cyril wasted no time. Quickly and quietly, he followed the woman up the grand staircase and along the corridor, noticing which room she disappeared into. Immediately she was inside, he spotted a cleaner pushing a trolley that was laden with towels, toiletries and laundry bags.
Bingo, he mumbled under his breath.
Once the cleaner let herself into the room at the far end of the corridor, Cyril quickly grabbed a laundry bag from the trolley, placed a white towel over his arm and then knocked at the room the posh woman had just entered.
Who is it?
Bellowed a female voice, in a tone that was clearly angry.
Compliments of the manager,
came a voice from outside the room. The door was flung open, and there, wearing a well-fitted petticoat, stood the woman with a face like thunder.
What compliments? My manager saw what happened downstairs, and he has offered you a dry cleaning service. There is absolutely no charge, and you will have your dress brought back first thing tomorrow.
The woman stared for a moment, before snatching the laundry bag and shoving the dress inside.
Well, if he's offering a free laundry service, I should throw in my other dresses. After all, the management should be more careful who they let into the hotel. The man who did this to my dress was some bloody great oaf who was obviously three sheets to the bloody wind, she spat, as she opened the wardrobe door.
Pulling four dresses from their hangers, she threw them into the laundry bag. Cyril could hardly believe his luck with the way the plan was working.
Miss, might I also suggest that we have your shoes cleaned? I know our manager wouldn't want to have an unhappy customer. Quite right, too, she replied.
She spun around and went into the room to look for her shoes that she'd thrown across the room in anger. Gathering them up, she threw them into the proffered laundry bag.
And you can tell the manager.
The sound of the phone ringing put her off her stride. Cyril felt his heart was in his mouth. He prayed it wasn't the manager, or he was well and truly in the shit. Moving across the room to the phone, she picked up the receiver and said,
Darling, I will be along in a jiffy. Now then, why don't you book a table for the four of us, and I will see you soon. Toodle-pip, my sweet.
Replacing the receiver, she strode over to the door and handed Cyril the bag before she waved him off and slammed the door. With the laundry bag in his hands, he hurried along the corridor. He then realised that it would hardly look good for him to walk out of the Dorchester with a laundry bag bearing the hotel's logo. In fact, it would look highly suspicious. He stopped and leaned against a wall in a recess to give himself time to think. The lift bell rang and the door opened ahead of him. From out of the lift stepped a very smart-looking man, possibly Spanish or Italian, followed by one of the hotel's bellboys loaded up with luggage. The boy put the suitcases on the floor before he unlocked and opened the room for the guest to enter. He then began to take the cases inside. Cyril heard the smartly dressed man ask the bellboy if he had all the luggage. Cyril's intuition that the man was foreign was confirmed. When the bellboy left the room, Cyril saw him shut the door behind him and then walk towards the lift. But because the bellboy had stepped backwards and then turned immediately in the direction of the lift, Cyril could see why he had not spotted the one remaining case left outside the room. Cyril's eyes scanned the corridor, and to his relief, he was alone. With the bellboy now in the lift and the corridor still clear, he rushed up to the suitcase, grabbed it, and ran to the staircase. On opening the suitcase, and without unzipping the interior, he placed all the dresses and the pair of shoes inside. He struggled a little to get everything to fit and to shut the case, but by sitting on it, he finally succeeded. With his adrenaline at a peak, he hurried down the staircase and out through the foyer, where he spotted Frank standing well back behind the palm tree. Catching his attention with a wink, he strode confidently out through the hotel entrance. As soon as he turned the corner, Cyril managed to bring his heart rate down. Seeing Frank approach him, he yelled,
"Fuck, Frank, we better leg it, mate. I don't know what I've half-inched, but I may have just nicked stuff off a mafia man."
As they ran, they both began to laugh until they were in hysterics, and they had to lean against a wall to catch their breath.
Crikey! For all we know, we might be running with a dead body in the suitcase. Well, if it is, I bet it's a midget.
By the time they were on the bus home, Frank was ready to take on the world. England had won the World Cup. His father was teaching him to drive. And now the plan had gone so well that Cyril's infectious optimism was rubbing off, and he too felt he could conquer Mount Everest.
"Me and you, Frank, we're going to be rich, just like them toffs, just like that lord. Me, well, I've just got to come up with the right plan."
Chapter 8. With large grins on their faces, Cyril and Frank appraised the suitcase. Both surmised that there was something very special inside it. Neither of them even considered that it may contain only a few pairs of underpants or a couple of shirts. The lift to their block opened, and they both nudged each other before going inside with the ominous suitcase. They had agreed that apart from the woman's clothes and shoes, the rest of the contents in the suitcase were for sharing equally. In fact, that pact had stood intact since they were 9 years old. 6 years later, they were still honouring their promise to each other. Once the lift jolted to a stop at the second floor, Cyril could have kicked himself. He'd obviously pressed the wrong button for his floor. He was even more pissed off, though, when the doors opened and he and Frank were faced with three young men, all around 20 years old. The tallest one, Nigel Deacon, otherwise known as Nut Nut, stood in the middle with his chest out and with a cocky sneer across his face. His hair was a light ginger colour, and his cheeks were pitted with acne scars. His brother, Neville, the lad to his left, was more heavily built, with auburn hair and a pale skin. His strikingly brown and intense eyes gave him a vicious look. Gavin Pearson, the young man to his right, was the shortest. Unlike the other two, he had light brown hair cut very short, and he looked completely gormless.
"Well, lads, look what we have here," said Nut Nut,
as he held the lift door open while his two sidekicks stepped inside. Cyril gripped the suitcase tighter. He guessed the strangers were out to cause trouble and would more than likely try to take the suitcase. However, Cyril had worked hard and taken a great risk to secure his mother a dress for the local tea party that everyone was going to. But because she couldn't afford a nice rig out, he'd had to think of a creative way of ensuring she had one. The lift door closed, leaving Cyril and Frank pushed against the back, while the three bullies glared at them and then laughed in their direction. Nut-Nut pressed the button for the next floor up. He knew where Reardon and Marsden lived.
"Nice leather suitcase you have there, and I'm guessing that it ain't yours. So where did you nick it from? You see, I'm one of those good Samaritans that likes to do the right thing and return stolen goods to their rightful owner. But you ain't the owner, are you?"
Cyril looked at each one in turn, quickly working out a plan to get out of this intimidation.
"It ain't nicked. It belongs to me father, who's a copper."
Nut-Nut laughed.
"Ha ha! Hark at this little tow rag. A copper, yeah? You lying bastard. And I hate liars, don't I, Neville? Don't I, Gavin?"
Neville and Gavin, who now acted like Tweedledum and Tweedledee, replied in unison.
"Yep, Nut-Nut, you do."
Moments later, the lift doors opened onto the third floor walkway. As Cyril and Frank attempted to squeeze past, Nut-Nut pushed Cyril back, stopping him from exiting the lift.
"Get off me!"
yelled Cyril, as he tried again to leave the lift.
"Mouthy little fucker, ain't ya?"
replied Nut-Nut, as he pushed Cyril even harder in the chest.
"I said, get the fuck off me!"
yelled Cyril, now livid that he was being stopped from moving. Unexpectedly, he felt as if the world he knew was once more changing. The dreaded red mist descended, and without thinking, he grabbed the suitcase with both hands and used it to barge his way out of the lift. Nut-Nut was taken aback and lost his balance, grabbing one of his mates to stop himself from tumbling. But Neville had nothing to grab hold of to stop himself from falling, and both men fell backwards, out onto the walkway. The whole incident took place almost in slow motion, which gave Frank the chance to make sure that Nut-Nut and Neville remained on the deck. In one fluid movement, he lifted his leg and pounded Nut-Nut in the chest. He followed that up with a hard kick to Neville's face. With only Gavin left on his feet, Cyril, who was never slow on the uptake, took his opportunity to ram him in the face with the suitcase, which he did, repeatedly, until Gavin tumbled backwards out of the lift and half onto the walkway. But Cyril wasn't finished. Standing over him, he stamped on his face, over and over again. He didn't stop until he was breathless. Nut-Nut managed to get to his feet to take Frank on, but Frank punched him hard before he could get a blow in. Frank then grabbed Nut-Nut's collar, and with a powerful right hook, Nut-Nut fell backwards from the blow. It was at that point Cyril really saw the dark side of Frank. He watched his friend pull his fisherman's knife from inside his jacket pocket, and in one easy slice, he cut Nut-Nut's ear clean off. The lift door was opening and shutting because Gavin was slumped across the entrance. Cyril grabbed Frank's arm, picked up the suitcase and said,
"Let's get moving, Frank, before we get fucking nicked."
Frank looked at the shriveled piece of ear and tossed it over the balcony.
"No one will ever try to rob us again. Fuck 'em."
Cyril was hurrying along the walkway, shaking his head.
"Frank, who's in yours?"
"No one. Me dad's at Shirley's."
"Good. Let's get inside. I can't go home like this. Me mum will worry."
They stopped at Frank's front door and peered down the walkway to see if the three guys had recovered. There was no movement, so quickly they hurried inside and slammed the door shut behind them.
"Bloody hell spells, Frank. You do realise you cut that bastard's ear clean off, don't you?"
Laughing, Frank said in his deep tone,
"Of course. And what about you, Cyril? Christ, I thought you were going to kill that guy. I don't think he has much of a face left. You ripped his mouth wide open."